Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and their multiple birth parents of children with disabilities. And this week we're speaking to a really super famous parent who is managing and maybe not managing her own disabilities.
This podcast contains truth, laughter and the occasional F word, so it may not be suitable for children, so you may need to put your AirPods, not AirBuds, as my scholarship keeps telling me. They're not AirPods. Anyway, put whatever you've got headphones in so the kids can't hear. Or if you want your children to be swearers, then let them listen.
Let them enjoy.
Hello, Mandy.
Hello, Kate.
Here we are back, week two.
Woo.
Yep. So I hope everyone enjoyed our
Rambling of the first episode.
Yeah, it was a bit rambling, but that's all right. We're back now. We've hit the ground running. Kids are at school.
Yes.
Work's back.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like things are okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not back at work yet, are you?
Oh, no. I've got another week or two. Yeah, because I've got to get the website back.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
But now I've got lots of people booked in. So, okay.
Good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back to it. Actually, I've had a break. I think that's what happened. You need a break.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's what they're for. Who knew?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm pretty excited about who's going to be on our podcast today. I have followed her career from afar for many a year and read many of her things. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Jamila, Jamila Rizvi. And I am mum to Ruffy, who is 5 and a half, counting down to being 5 3/4 very soon.
Yep.
Has started school the week that we're recording.
Yes.
And I do a bunch of different things, but I think most of the time I'm either writing something or talking too much.
Yeah, wow, true.
Sounds a lot like us at the moment.
I know, that's right. Well, we're going to ask our questions to you and then we'll get into it and just have our normal conversation where we don't know where we're going, which is usual.
Yeah. All right, so our first question that we ask everyone that comes on our podcast is, do you have music or a band or a song that either really gets you through hard times or pumps you up in the good times?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a little bit pathetic because the person whose music gets me through is also my best friend. So I became a massive Claire Bowditch fan when I was in high school.
Yes.
Back when I thought all my emotions were complex and adult.
Yeah.
Like hers were.
Yeah.
I used to listen to her music and cry when I got dumped or when someone was mean or whatever.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it was probably 10 years after having a poster of her on my wall, we met and became very close friends.
Oh,
and
amazing.
Claire's music's become the soundtrack of my life. She sang at my wedding.
Oh.
And she used to sing lullabies to my little boy after he was born. And, I don't know what I'd do without her, but also without her beautiful voice.
Music, yeah. And a fellow, she's a twin mum.
Yes, she is. Yeah. She is. She's got two boys, Oscar and Elijah.
Yeah.
Who are taller than me.
Yeah. They're teenagers, aren't they? Like our guys. Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Well, we love her too.
Yeah. We love her too, of course.
Yes. Oh. Who doesn't?
Her latest book, I was just crying and laughing that I'm sending her DMs. She's probably thinking, who the hell is this person?
You would have loved it. The amazing thing about Claire is she has this capacity for empathy. Like, it's like empathy is her superpower. And she'd never be frustrated by people getting in touch to.
Yeah, she was super kind.
Crazy feeling. Like, she'd be like, give me more.
All right. Okay, so my next question is, did you win any awards at school?
You did, didn't you?
We've had people brag. It's fine. Yeah, go. That's fine.
I won a lot of awards in school.
Yeah, tell us.
I was an awardee kid.
Yeah.
I think I topped a few subjects.
Yeah.
I won some awards for like contributions to the school, the community and culture. Awesome. And like that. Yep. I was an award winning school type.
Awesome.
Yes. And those people are very valuable.
Yes.
We need those brains.
And were they meaningful to you?
Yeah, I think so. I was a super overachievy kind of kid, but not in the singular sense, if that makes sense. I wouldn't do one activity and be the best at it. I wanted to do everything so much to the point that if they counted all my extracurricular activities, I would have graduated twice because I just joined all the stuff.
Yeah.
Mostly because I have an extreme fear of missing out, which I have carried with me to this day.
A little bit like one of my kids, actually. Yes. Yeah, she's very much like that.
Yeah, yep.
Okay, and then the big question. Why are you a P or a member of the P tribe?
Okay, I didn't understand what this question was going to be at first, but I thought about it and I've decided that I am P adjacent.
Excellent.
I am going to describe myself as a chickpea because my family are Middle Eastern and Indian, so yes. We're going to add the chickpea into the mix. And I am not I don't have a child with a disability, but I am someone who has acquired disabilities as an adult. So yeah. I'm going to kind of just like hang out over here near the rest of the green peas.
You are definitely in the pea tribe.
You are. And hummus, may we all.
I know.
Isn't hummus one of the best things in the whole world? Where would we be without the chickpea?
I'm genuinely quite happy to spend the rest of the podcast talking about hummus.
Well, I live a majority of my life as a vegetarian, so I probably eat chickpeas every other day.
Do you?
Oh, I love them.
Oh.
Yeah, we eat them in everything.
Hmm.
Yep, big chickpea fans here. Anyway.
I think we need to come up with a term.
For pea adjacent.
Maybe adults with a disability.
Yeah.
Because we've interviewed a lot. So why haven't we come up with that?
Because we're not very organised and we struggle just to get our own shit together. That's probably why.
Probably. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your acquired disability? What, for people that don't know, and what you're comfortable sharing?
I'm super comfortable sharing. I'm just conscious of being complicated.
Go for it.
So at the end of 2017, I was diagnosed with quite a rare kind of brain tumour. After that, I had two brain surgeries after it grew back a second time, and I then had a course of what ended up being 36 rounds of radiation after it grew back again.
Oh, my word.
Since then, knock on all the wood, I've had no growth, but as a result of the surgeries and radiation, a lot of damage was done to that area of my brain. Mm. So I have a bunch of different complicated disabilities as a result. But at a broad level, my pituitary gland doesn't work, which means that my body doesn't produce hormones, or at least doesn't produce hormones in a way that is useful to me.
Mm. Right.
And that has a lot of repercussions because there's a lot of hormones, which is something I didn't know.
No, you wouldn't.
I thought there were the sex hormones. That was it.
Yeah.
Just a little naive. So obviously they're affected, but a whole bunch of other stuff, which is kind of nutty, out of this world. Like, my body can't balance water on its own. So without a tablet, I would be like insatiably thirsty and also constantly going to the bathroom and would dehydrate and eventually feel. My body doesn't make any cortisol, which is a really important stress hormone.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I don't get stressed. critical.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. The problem is that when my body's stressed, I don't produce the hormone I need to be able to cope with it.
Yes, oh. Got it.
I can go into something called an adrenal crisis, which is an emergency. So there's a whole bunch of stuff. That's sort of two of the sort of 12 different ones that are affected. But it's made life really complex.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where, if we go back, how did you know that you had that brain tumor? Like what was happening with you?
Very little. I was incredibly fortunate that we picked it up when we did. Most people with my particular kind of brain tumor tend to pick it up when they start going blind. So we were very lucky. We found it when we did. I had a 2.5-year-old and I was on a book tour and I skipped my period. And I assumed it was stress.
Yeah.
I thought, I've got a young child and I'm like on this big book tour and it's intense. I must be stressed. But because we were thinking about having another child, I thought, oh, I better get checked out just in case. And I had a very diligent GP who didn't dismiss me. And I've since been told by multiple GPs. Most of them would have.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Most of them would have said, you're anxious. But she got a bunch of blood tests done and they figured it out from there.
Wow. Oh, so you were at that point thinking, oh, maybe we'll have another baby after I've done this book tour.
It was very much top of mind that sometime in the next 2 years I wanted to have another one. And obviously when your hormones are affected, that makes conceiving a child extremely difficult.
Yes.
I think you never say never and you never know what the future will hold. And I've done IVF, so we've got embryos frozen. But certainly at this stage, I think our family's just going to be the three of us.
Yeah.
Did you do the IVF before you had the surgery, or what? When did you do that?
I did it afterwards, actually. Right. I was advised to do it before, but it was almost like it was just too much.
Mm. Yeah.
I think at that point I was so scared of the surgery.
Yes. Yep.
The idea of more surgery was too much for me at that moment. And despite the fact that doctors recommended it, I sort of said to my husband, do you mind if I don't have it? And he said, you can do whatever you want.
Yes,
of course. What happened on that day when you got the diagnosis? How did you survive that?
You know, it's really hard to answer, mostly because I think I started dissociating to an extent around that time. I really do feel like not just the day of diagnosis, but in the months that followed, because I waited quite a while for my brain surgery, almost 3 months, for a number of different reasons. And I spent that whole time just completely terrified and almost not in the world. Like I didn't feel connected to what was going on around me or the people around me. I felt like I was sort of sleepwalking and yet panicking at the same time. I think the answer is I did survive it, and it's a good reminder, I think, for myself but also the people around me that mental health episodes can be so severe. They feel like physical health episodes.
Yes.
They can be completely debilitating. But a mental health episode in and of itself will not kill you.
Yeah.
I think I was pretty convinced it would.
Well, it feels that bad, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It felt so strange, and I think I felt so scared. And by the time I went into that surgery, I barely knew what I was doing.
It was just
do what comes next.
Yeah, and just you're handing yourself over to the people that you are trusting know what they're doing.
Yeah, which is what hospitals are like,
yes,
right?
That's right.
For those of us who aren't medical,
have no idea.
A real sense of hello, strangers.
Yeah,
have my life.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
Yep.
It's such a bizarre feeling. I only know that in terms of the surgeries for my daughters, but and you're just like, I can't think about things. They told me not to Google things. I didn't. What about you? Did you go down?
I Googled everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would too.
Yeah, I Googled everything. Yeah. After a while I stopped.
Yes.
Because I did reach a point, I think it would have been about 2 months after diagnosis, where I somehow managed to draw a mental line and say, no, I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Especially because one of the things they don't tell you about Google, they talk to you about all the crap that's out there and, all the stuff that is not true or whatever it might be. What I think they don't talk to you about with Dr. Google is often you find something that is from an extremely reputable source and is highly accurate, but you as a layperson don't know how to interpret it.
Yes.
Your interpretation of it is inaccurate.
Yeah.
That there's nothing wrong with the content or the data, but the way you comprehend it and put it in your head is not quite right.
Yeah.
I've really been helped along in the fact that my husband is he works in medical malpractice. He's a lawyer.
Yeah.
But that to do that job, you do have to have a pretty decent basic medical knowledge, at least in understanding journal articles and the rest.
Yeah.
And I really leaned on him and a girlfriend of mine who's an oncologist to kind of be my interpreters.
Mm. Yeah, you really need it. And did you tell people or did you just sort of keep it to yourself before your surgery?
Yeah, we told people. Yeah. And I don't think it ever occurred to me not to.
Yeah.
I'm not a super duper private person.
Yep.
And I think I'm, you know how people always say things like, I'm not good at asking for help. I'm really good at asking for help. I have no problem with telling people things are harder than they are.
Great.
Awesome.
And I think I wanted my people around.
Yes.
I wanted help.
Yep.
And, you know, to their credit, my friends and family really stepped up. They were extraordinary when I was sick and continue to be when things are tough. We've got an amazing village where we live now and we wouldn't get by without them.
How did you navigate mothering in that space?
Early on, I don't think I navigated it very well.
Mm.
Don't think I covered myself in glory. my little boy was 2.5 when I was diagnosed and I think I just sort of exited the space.
Yeah.
I let my husband do the parenting, my in-laws and my parents and others. I couldn't. The very idea of him distressed me early on.
Yes, yeah.
Because I would just look at him and think about what his life was going to be like.
Yeah.
And I actually found it very hard to parent.
Yes.
And I think after this first surgery, I was quite nervous about him hurting me.
Yes. Mm.
Which turned out to be fair because he ended up breaking my nose with a Spider-Man doll.
I remember that.
Yes.
But after my second brain surgery, after that diagnosis and after the surgery, I threw everything at him.
Oh.
Right.
I basically said everything else goes on the back burner. My relationship with him has taken a real hit.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it did. It did. It took a real hit during that
period where we sort of
separated from each other. And
it's such a physical age, 2.5, the falling on you when the body's slamming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'd get hurt and he wanted dad. He'd wake up in the middle of the night and he wanted dad. Mm. And I sort of knew, I think, around that second surgery, I couldn't do it again.
Yeah.
So I really worked hard at almost bringing him closer while I was sick and not scaring him but letting him be quite tactile and be near me and to talk about a lot of it with him. And we really managed to repair the relationship as a result. And he is he's a very wise 5-year-old.
Yeah. As are our family, sibling kids.
They've just seen a different part of life.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually I think it makes them really empathetic, but, which is just
I think that's true.
One of
I
the best qualities so ever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, it's hard on them, but as I said, my son started school this week and I was sort of reflecting on all those big milestones, like ride a bike and first day of school and tying his shoelaces. And he has other milestones, like once he could call an ambulance. Tell them what was wrong with me once he was old enough to, call his dad because mum might not pick him up when he was old enough to stay with a neighbour overnight.
Yeah.
Look after him. Like he's had different, harder milestones than other kids.
Yeah, yeah. We have a whole episode on milestones and how different they can be for different families.
And how we don't highlight those ones are the most remarkable.
Yeah.
Instead of going through that stupid book that the nurse gives you and saying, oh, can do this and can do that. We're rewriting them.
Yeah.
Don't worry, doctors, not technically, but we're rewriting them for ourselves.
I remember it was about a week after, don't tell my doctors this, it was about a week after my first brain surgery, maybe 10 days. I'd just gotten home from hospital and I had full craniotomy, so I had like 57 staples in my head. And Ruffy wanted to go to the movies on a Sunday. And I was like, please, can we take him to the movies?
Yeah.
And Jeremy, my husband, was like, you just had brain surgery. And I was like, I want to take him. I'm like, how hard can it be? We'll drive in, drop me at the door, I'll walk to the movie theater, which is like 50 meters, and sit in a chair. Like, let's take him to see some stupid whatever Disney Pixar.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 5.
Yeah.
I don't know how I convinced Jeremy, but he was like, all right, we will do it. And we drove in, and you two are Melbourne people, so you will be familiar with Northland.
Yes.
Those who aren't, let me set the scene. It's like it's the saddest of malls. The mall you go to when you've got to get stuff, but it's not a joyous experience to be there. Like, it's got a grotty food court and it's like nothing's nice, right? Yep. You go there to get a hat from Kmart for your kid.
Yep.
Are you on the Facebook page of Friends of Northland? Because my sister is. And she loves to tell me about it.
You should be. We arrived and about we were walking through the food court and I said, I feel dizzy. And I fainted, and Jeremy had to pick me up and put me on tables.
Oh, goodness.
And all I remember is thinking, I'm going to die in Northland.
Out the front of Subway.
But Ruffy was amazing. He was there when the ambulance got there. They came, they picked me up, they put me in the ambulance, and they were about to put a drip in my arm. And I said, can you wait a moment? Just wait till my little boy's out of the way.
Yeah.
And he just looks at me and goes, Mummy, don't be scared. It is a needle. You will get a lollipop when it is over.
Yeah. Oh, bless him.
Just took it in his stride and still tells people about the day he got to sit in the ambulance.
Yeah, well, that would be a pretty cool thing.
You know,
2.5-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, ambulance. Aww. Far out, though. And so I take it you didn't see the movie.
No, I don't even know what it was.
You might need to recreate it.
I mean, Netflix, you know.
Oh, no, it's all there.
You just do it at home. For sure.
Goodness.
Oh, my goodness. And so during that time, you kept working though, didn't you?
As much as I could, yeah. So my first surgery, I went back really early, like I think 5 weeks after the brain surgery, and the recovery was a lot longer than that. And I remember thinking I was fine. And I look back at photos of the time, and I'm half Indian. I look like a really white person.
Yeah.
Like,
so pale. Yeah.
I'm so pale, and I'm clearly not well enough to be out and about and doing things. And then after the second one, I think it was a bit more realistic, especially because it was a bigger surgery and it was more dangerous and more things went wrong. And so I knew I had to be prepared. So I did a lot of things. Like, I recorded podcasts in advance. I wrote columns in advance so that after I had the surgery, we could kind of drip feed them out.
Yeah.
So I think I looked like I was working more than I was.
Right, right, yeah.
It's the wisdom of having frequent surgeries. I feel like I'm better at it as a mum now than I was the first time. Yeah. I know exactly what's happening. It was the first one. I'd send them back to school in the wheelchair and I'd pick her up and she'd be like, and I'd think, oh, man. But I was just like, let's get back to life. Let's get back. We're fine. We're
and
fine.
I think it makes you feel like you're coping to do normal things.
But I look back and think, oh, my goodness, that poor little thing.
I know. And actually you don't have to cope. No. But you want to. You just want everyone. You don't want people to treat you.
Same again.
Yeah, you want it to be the same.
You do. Yeah.
And then you have that beautiful epiphany when you go, oh, it's never going to be the same.
Which maybe you did the second time, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's dead right. I didn't. I think after that first surgery, I thought, and so did everyone around me, I have done that now.
Yeah,
like, that was
of course.
A bad thing that happened to me.
Yes.
It was like a car accident. Like it happened once, it was awful, but I'm fine now. And so we're back on track and we're just getting on with life.
Yeah.
That's how I felt, especially because after that first one, I didn't acquire any new disabilities.
Yeah, that's so what I was going to ask you, when all that really started to unfold.
Yeah.
I felt healthy and well, and life didn't have to adjust much. Yes. I had to adjust to recovery, but I was fine after that. Whereas now, I mean, even if this tumor never comes back again, life's never going to be the same.
Yes.
You know, then life's never going to be normal. There's always going to be really big risks and things I can and can't do, and I look different and I feel different.
Mm.
And I think once you've got those two things combined, it's very hard to kid yourself that things are the same.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
So when we were all coping with lockdown, you really had to, didn't you? Like, I remember reading that your son, he was with your mum, or because you didn't want anyone to get sick, and then your husband got really sick. And
my husband was really sick right at the start of the pandemic, like proper sick.
Mm.
And my son was away for the weekend with my mother-in-law down the beach when he got super sick. And he went to the doctor and they were like, this was in the first weeks where they were like, you can't have a COVID test.
Yes.
Like, because you haven't been overseas. And he was like, but I have all the symptoms.
Yes.
They sent him away. A week later, he was worse. And I've never seen him that unwell.
Wow.
We kept my son away. He went to another GP who said, we're going to test you for everything else in an attempt to rule things out.
Right.
Everything else was clear. And he was like, mate, I think you've got COVID, but I cannot actually get you a test.
Wow.
It was a very intense time. I became like lady with the Windex. Like,
yes.
I scrubbed stuff. Like, yep. I just walked around the house, and Jeremy, I put him in our bedroom with the ensuite and was like, don't come out. You can go to the bathroom. And we've got a little courtyard off our room. I was like, you can be in the bedroom. If you want fresh air, there is a courtyard. Do not leave that space. And anytime he'd like open a door, I'd be like, no, spray the handle and like scrub it. I was obsessed.
We needed you running hotel quarantine in
It would have been fine. No second lockdown.
I was on it.
Oh.
But it was a really intense, kind of movement into
yes.
And then you sort of role reversal, you're then caring for him.
Yes, except he doesn't like being cared for.
Yeah, of course not.
Doesn't want any help, just wants to sleep. and then we found out later we were both staying up all night on our phones, like reading all the news from the US and Italy.
Yeah, we really did do that. And I just think we were thinking, that can't happen here, can it?
We've been in Sydney the week before Melbourne shut down, and my 10-year-old was super sick, and I called an ambulance with her, and when we took her to emergency, they refused to test her because I hadn't been overseas. But I said, I've been in Sydney Harbour. I've hugged 200 people at our show.
Yep.
Like, just – and now I think that's crazy. So he probably did have it. I don't think she had it, but I don't know.
I know.
It's just
– she had all the symptoms.
It's a really intense kind of – I think I keep thinking about that period of time. We all went through in different ways.
Yes.
It was like watching a tsunami coming. Yes. Right? And going, is that going to flatten and be an ordinary wave when it hits, or is it going to be terrifying and kill everyone? And
yes.
Still every day I think I find it, we've got a lot of family in the States and Europe who are in hard lockdown. And it's hard to get my head around that they're so deeply in it in a way that I never understand.
No, yeah, no, we lived in Melbourne and we still don't understand,
No. You
know, what it was like. I remember my big profound moment was, apart from the paediatrician saying, don't send the boys to school, and I was like, oh, okay, because everyone else stayed a week. We pulled them out a week early.
Same.
I was listening to Dr. Carl on Triple J and he said, I don't want to alarm everybody, but unless we get this right, we will all be going to funerals of someone we love this year. And I just thought, Dr. Carl's not an alarmist, you know? And that's when, and I was in the truck with the work boys and I was like, we can't keep working like this. Like, something has to change because I can't be responsible for people dying or, you know? Yeah. And then,
you're on high alert as someone who's already been through such trauma.
You're like, you're ready, aren't you? You're like, yeah, I'm here, I'm good, I know what happens with trauma, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know about you two, I got a bit like that the whole time.
Yeah.
Mm.
Not in a sort of an alertness, bad things are coming, but in a, I'm here, I'm ready to help. And it's the first time in a health crisis, where I haven't been the one in crisis.
Yes.
So
I'm
like, yes.
This is my time to shine. And I went massively overboard, like cooking for people and care packages and ridiculous, like ask any of my mates, I like went a bit silly. Because I just felt quite empowered, like yes. I'm the helper.
Yeah, I understand that feeling. I have felt like that myself. When yeah. you're the recipient of so much care.
Yeah, you want to give it back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, really, really, really true.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mandy and I have just finished reading your book. I actually got it for Christmas and then I didn't read it.
That's all right. We got the royalties anyway.
Because we are trying to edit our own book. So, you know, all those moments where you'd normally just have that blissful reading time, you have to read your own words.
No, we're already sick of our own self.
Sick of reading what I've got to say about things.
But you're at the editing point. That's yes. Like you were on the way.
I know.
Well, we wrote it in the lockdown, like, you know, so I don't know.
I mean, editing's way more fun than writing. Yeah. I really, yeah. Yes. But we're still, you know, trying to catch moments here and there. But this is the book of I wanted to read this book during lockdown.
I know.
And then
tell
you wrote
us.
It. You did it. How did you decide to do it?
How did it come about? Because yeah. it's perfect.
A couple of reasons. I work with a group called Future Women who are part of the Nine Network, and they're run by a woman called Helen McCabe who used to edit the Australian Women's Weekly, who is just the most extraordinary boss.
Yep.
And we knew we wanted to do some different things once the pandemic hit, partly because we were a bit worried about going under.
Yes, yes. Of course.
Yes.
I didn't know what was going to be next for the business.
Lose all your work. Yeah.
And I had a conversation with Helen where I said to her how much I wanted to speak to my nan.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, my nan lived through the tuberculosis epidemic, and I remember her stories of that time that she was sent home from school for 6 months yes. to care for her sibling, and how hard that was for her because she was a really academic kid and she was bored at home and they were barely allowed out and things like this. And same during polio. And I just wanted her to talk to me and tell me it feels big and scary, but it will pass. Mm. Everything passes. And Helen said the same thing. She was telling me about Queenie, who was her grandmother, who she also missed and who had similar stories. And basically we decided we'd talk to other people's grandmas.
Yes, perfect.
Yeah.
And it's just so often, and Mandy probably says it more than me, but when you have a child with an additional need, you yearn to speak to a woman 10 years further down the track.
That's all I want. Yeah.
I just want to hear how they did it and what they did and what life's like now.
And what can I learn from you and, all of that.
And that is what this book is, which we should say the name of, is Untold Resilience, which is a perfect name. Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. And I know that the peas will probably have half of them have read it, but they will read it.
I know in my group of friends, like in my book club, we were all like, okay, we feel like this is our war. And that sounds really dramatic, but, you know.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And one of the things
we're all trying to get our head around that.
Resilience is that there are women who lived through world wars who say this is worse. This is harder because those periods, particularly for Melbourne in that deep lockdown, but, oh my gosh, around the world, of during wartime you had your people around you.
Yes.
You know, you were desperately sad, but you were – You could go to your friends and you had people with you, but having to do it alone is completely different. The isolation made it hard. I think.
Where did you find everyone?
Oh, everywhere. Like the connections to these women were as messy as, like, you know, my sister's music teacher's brother's mother-in-law. You know, like it just was like we went on these huge circular routes, and I would have these conversations around April and May of last year, and someone would say something and I'd be like, sorry, who? Sorry, tell me about her again. Like, I'd be at the dentist being like, excuse me, tell me more. What? And I just grilled everyone. And we really wanted a group of women. The stories are in their own words, but they told their stories to a journalist
who
kind of crafted the narrative for them. And I edited the book, but I spent time with four of the women in the book. And two in particular I've become really close to, and we still chat and see one another. And, it has been like acquiring new friends. And there's something about illness, which is something you two will understand, that illness ages you.
Yes.
And for me, I have a lot in common with women in their 80s and 90s that I don't have in common with my mates in their
30s.
There's a really lovely bonding. I was talking one of the women in the book, I was talking her through her first brain scan the other day, talking about what it would feel like and what it would look like and how to prepare. it's been a really lovely process, and their stories are so full of hope.
Yes,
they are.
And candid, but also gut-wrenchingly hard.
Yes.
I think Mandy and I both grew up in the church, in different churches, and we've left that environment now. But for me, one of my favourite things about being in a church was the older women. And there was really that, you know, they'd just give you their opinion, and or they'd just come and talk to you.
And they had their seat.
Yeah, they had their seat.
They weren't allowed to sit in their seat.
No, no, no. But they, I don't know, I think for my kids, they don't have that.
Yeah.
That intergenerational space.
That was one of the beautiful
space.
Parts of growing up in a church.
That is a really nice part about
going
to church.
You know, I was a teenager and I had a baby on my hip, and then I was talking to an 80-year-old lady every Sunday. It was beautiful, actually.
Yeah. And I think I was very much the same until a few months ago, and I feel really, really privileged that these women have come into my life, and I get panicked if they don't call me back.
Yes.
Of course. Well, they're elderly. Yeah.
Yes, they're amazing.
Some of them have done radio interviews and podcast interviews and TV and been on a stage. And next month they're going to be on, three of them are going to be on a stage. 100 people in the audience. They've never done that. Oh. Imagine doing that for the first time.
Oh, it's incredible.
In your 90s.
But how great that they're telling their stories.
Yes.
So I just think, you know, the power of women's storytelling.
Oh, we
love it. For so many years we've had the power of men's telling stories.
Yeah.
And now, through podcasts and other means, we're just all starting to talk and people are listening.
Yeah.
And I think it's you can find people now to listen to.
You know how women say in their 40s and their 50s, they're that, what do they say? They're sort of the invisible age. This is even more so in their 80s and 90s. And what richness. Oh, and then I confess I was reading along and I was like, when is there going to be a lady with a child with a disability? I'm waiting. And then boom, Liz came in. And I was just howling, tears running down my face. I just thought, I need to meet her. And these are the women I'm yearning to talk to.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't know why we wrote our book, because she said everything in about
five
pages.
She had Helen McCabe, who's a pretty first class journalist, to help her tell the story. But she is an extraordinary woman. It was there's something about meeting the women in that book, and one of the women who we interviewed died between writing the book and publishing, and even being able to give her name was Lakshmi Maksai, and she was quite young in the context of who we included in the book, and her death was quite unexpected. I think it was quite sudden. And just being able to give her daughter and her family literally hours of audio and say, here is her talking to one of our journalists for hours over many weeks and telling her life story. It's a really amazing time capsule. It makes me want to go around and record all the people I love.
Yes, definitely.
Definitely.
Do you think since going through everything you've been through, you're a different journalist than you were before? Yeah. Do you ask different questions?
100%.
Yeah.
I think I'm kinder.
Yeah.
Not that I am some especially kind person now. I just think I was a bit dismissive when I was younger. I was trying to do the job of a journalist and I cared more about a great story than I did about the person I was talking to. And now I care infinitely more about the person I'm talking to than a great story. And there are a lot of stories that the women in that book told us that are not in there.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
They decided they didn't want them, or we talked about them and decided that it wasn't the best thing for them to tell them. That's putting the person before the work.
Yes.
I don't know if I was like that before.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And off topic, but what's it like working with Tom Tilly?
That was a segue.
That's really off topic.
I know, I just thought when we're speaking about journalists and being kind.
Oh, okay.
Tom Tilly can be quite.
That's what you mean. Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's so there's four of us who work on the briefing, and myself,
that's
Tom Tilly,
podcast.
And, and Annika Smethurst. Yeah. So it's our daily podcast, which basically puts the news in your headphones
really
every
good.
Day. Gives you the top headlines and then dives deep into a particular topic. And yeah, I think I lead with empathy. Lead with the emotions into a story. And Annika and Tom are much more factually driven because they're both, I think, more classically trained journos. Jan somewhere in the middle.
Yes.
And I think we all bring our strengths to the podcast. We have never had the problem of trying to ask the same question because we're all so different.
Which is true.
Yeah.
It's quite lovely. Yeah. But I've recently, we've recently launched the weekend briefing. And look, I wouldn't normally say this, but given who I'm talking to, so the briefing was a weekday podcast, but to get a news podcast out at 6 a.m., you start at 4, right?
Oh, my goodness.
So I was waking up very early to do the podcast, and Tom was off on leave for 2 weeks, so I was filling in, so I was doing it every day.
Yep.
And, having a not particularly hardy body, I went into an adrenal crisis during that second week because my body, my medication isn't designed to keep me awake for that long.
Yeah.
And it was a huge emergency and the full bit and hospital overnight and pumped full of drugs and it was properly dangerous and I knew I had to call and quit straight away because I knew if I waited, I would try and rationalize to myself. The next time I said, I'm so sorry. But literally like I could have died. I can't do this again.
Yeah.
And they were so kind. And Sam Kavanagh, who runs the show for podcasts over at Southern Cross or Stereo, he was Hamish and Andy's producer for over a decade. And he didn't fight me. He just said, okay. And he called me back a week later and said, what if we created a weekend episode that you could record on your own at any time of day?
Awesome.
I was like, yeah, I could do that.
Yes.
So we are now doing the weekend briefing, which is kind of like the Good Weekend to the Age.
Awesome. So perfect.
Like a profile style interview that I'll be doing every Saturday. And
has it come out? Really,
Yeah,
we started last week.
That's okay, I haven't seen it. Oh, I would love that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it really, I don't know, not only am I loving it because it means I get to sit down and talk with someone my way slowly in my style, get them to open up slowly about something, get them to trust me, but also there aren't many employers who will be that flexible and employers need to be more flexible.
Yes, they do.
And I think employers also need to see the benefits that come from that flexibility. I have bought my loyalty for life.
Yes.
Yes.
I bought a level of hard work that I will put in above and beyond because I know I owe it to them.
Yes.
They will get more out of me than they ever would have otherwise because they were willing to do that.
Yep.
And I don't think most employers, particularly in the media, see the benefits of a different perspective being worth changing things up, spending some money. But it is worth it, I think. You know, we make it worth it.
And also
our whole community understand that because we've had to often leave jobs, careers to care for our children and get them to appointments and therapies and all of that. So most of us go out on our own then just to try and, you know, make something.
Yeah. And I think as well, hopefully the generations under us will just realise that having all the one sort of person is boring, ends up getting you in trouble if you look at a lot of people that have been in the media for a long time, you know. So actually having a diverse workforce creates less problems.
I agree. And we also just need to start asking some questions about the way things already have always been done. You know, I grew up really, with a really firm view that, you know, there were some roles that could be part-time or job shared or flexible, but like the senior roles, you know, the CEO, the person in charge, that it just doesn't work. Why not?
Why?
Why doesn't it work? Yeah. Why doesn't it work?
Of course it works.
Because you put some creative thinking into it, you put some time into it, you put the right 2-3 people into it, you can get 3 times the brain power for almost the same salary.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, there are huge benefits. So I think it's, you know, part of it is about, I think, finding the confidence to ask, which is really hard.
It's hard.
The world that tells you you're not supposed to.
Yep.
And then also it's on employers to think laterally about how to make things work. And I think if you're willing to do that, any employers listening, the benefits are enormous.
Mm. Yeah, they are. And we also think when it comes, a lot of our listeners that have children that are late high school or early 20s who have a disability or additional need are very worried about them.
Oh, I'm so worried about the job.
A job that they enjoy.
Yes.
And that they're giving back to society.
Yes.
And
they can thrive in.
Yeah. And I just think if employers just thought outside the box a little bit, their workplace could be so amazing. Like Mandy and I have a friend whose child has mild cerebral palsy, autism and ADHD. And she was like, well, where's he going to get a job? And then he got a job at Bunnings and he's basically memorized all of Bunnings. And so whenever anyone asks where anything is, he's like, I know, like quicker than someone can look it up, right? And so everyone loves him. They're like, oh, we want to ask this guy. And he loves Bunnings. Do you know what I mean? Like it's this, but a lot of places would never have given him that job. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it's been so beneficial for them.
Yep.
So, yeah, we are.
My friend Tim has a number of complex physical and intellectual disabilities. And I met him for the first time when I worked in politics and he was part of a disability placement program that the minister I worked for, it was happening under her portfolio. And she sort of said, well, I can't, it doesn't make sense. We need to place someone in my office. If I'm the ambassador for this program, I want to be part of the program. And Tim came to work in our office and he did a lot of work with the mail and he was amazing at helping us out with photocopying and all sorts of work that he was doing for us. And we became friends, but we only stayed in touch now and then. And then when I got sick, he was literally the only person I'd ever met who'd had brain surgery.
Yes.
So I kind of called and was like really scared.
Yeah.
And got told, don't call me, I don't like the phone. We'll talk on the phone. But he was, and I don't want to say was, and is a phenomenal support because he just sat there and said, okay, let's talk about brain surgery. I've had 9.
Yes. I know.
You know, he was this resource for me of this incredible young guy who had been through so much more than me, and I learned an enormous amount from him. And when I talk to him now about his work, he doesn't do a lot of work because physically that's a bit too hard.
It's tiring.
But he does 2 days a week, and that work gives him a sense of self and a sense of purpose and contribution that I don't think anything else in your life can.
No. Everyone deserves that chance.
Yep.
Yeah.
We all do. So, yeah. And see, if someone hadn't taken a chance on giving him a job, then you wouldn't have known him and the whole thing. And you just realise how much better your life is for knowing more people.
That's right.
So, you know, I mean, Mandy and I, we're always crapping on about this, but we mean it a lot. We really mean it.
Well, because we want the world to be a kinder place.
Yeah.
And I've got 2 years till my daughter's out of high school and then I know I'm on. I'm on finding something for her and making her life as wonderful and as rich as I possibly can.
And I think I'm getting on my soapbox now, so you shut me up if you need to. But I think there is a greater capacity for empathy amongst those who have experienced serious illness or disability, either themselves or when it's someone they love.
Definitely.
And my dear friend Astrid is the host of the Garrett podcast, the State Library of Victoria's podcast. She's a writing teacher at RMIT, and she interviewed me for the Garrett a few years ago, after my first surgery, back when I thought it was just something that was done with.
Yeah.
And afterwards she sent me an email and said, I've got MS, and if you ever want to talk to someone about having a brain that doesn't quite work properly, you know, I'm here and blah, blah, blah. And I kind of wrote back and said, oh, thanks, that's really nice, but I'm fixed
I'm
now.
I'm fine now, yeah.
And then about 2 months later, she's the first person I thought of
yeah.
when
yeah.
I got re-diagnosed. And yes. I had to write this email being like, so blew you off.
Yeah.
That was a blue. And after that second surgery, I had like a – oh, I'm going to cry. Well, I had like a spreadsheet that one of my friends set up for me for visitors because yeah. I'm an extrovert and yes. I really need people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, you're not allowed to be alone yes. for 12 weeks when you've had a craniotomy because it's too dangerous.
Right.
Because you might have epilepsy.
Right.
And so when I wanted to go for a walk, I had to have someone walk me like yes. I was a puppy.
Yes.
And so I had this spreadsheet for who would come and visit and take me for a walk because it was the best way for me to get better. And Astrid, who I barely knew, came and put her name in once a week for 12 weeks.
Oh, no.
And she would show up every time and she would catch an Uber because she doesn't drive and she would walk with me and talk to me about what it was like. Mm. And she's kind of 5 years ahead of
yes.
me
when it
comes to the emotional acceptance
yes.
of what's happening to us, and what's happening to us is very different. Mm. You know, we only have the occasional symptom crossover, but
it's the knowing.
She gets me. She gets it in a way not even my husband
no
can get it.
No.
It's a different kind of getting it.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah. That's why we started the podcast.
It yes, is exactly what you've done. And you know, I think roughly half of Australia. I came across the two of you because of Annabelle Crabb.
Yes.
And I've since stayed with it because you've just opened up a world for me that I don't understand because
yes.
I'm the person with disabilities.
Yes.
And you've given me a new understanding that, you know, if I'm really honest, I'm not sure I would have thought out otherwise.
Mm.
And I am better for it.
Aww.
And better for it. And it's such a lovely space you've created.
Aww,
such an
thank you.
Space.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, it's just because there's lovely people and now we get to meet them and,
yeah.
you know, talk to them and other people get to hear about it and go, oh, that's interesting. It's not scary.
Yeah.
Let's get involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's
it's,
right.
yeah, it's actually not hard. You know, just reaching out to people.
And don't give it away.
No, okay. Very hard.
Oh, dear.
Now, we know that you also do folding washing, which just sounds riveting.
We're up for washing.
Yeah. Oh, I've folded washing with you before. So that's an Instagram. Is it on Facebook as well?
Yeah, we do it on Facebook and Instagram. So for those who are confused and why I like to fold washing publicly, once the pandemic hit, my friend Claire Bowditch and I moved our event series
yes.
that we were in Melbourne, Tea with Jem and Claire. We moved it online.
Yes.
And we have created a community of sort of 10,000 plus now
mm.
who come together regularly for book clubs. We did makeup tutorials. We had guest speakers. We did cooking classes. We did sing-alongs. We did all
yes.
sorts of stuff to keep people company, basically,
yes.
through the pandemic. And on Wednesday nights, we get together and we fold the washing.
Yep.
yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, but you get to hear people talking
yes.
and so you feel connected for that little bit of time and all the comments going up and, yeah, it's really cute. I like it.
Oh, it's great. We really miss it when we don't do one. We've got one this evening.
Yeah.
I'm like purposely keeping my husband away from it. He's trying to fold the washing. I'm like,
stop
it. You need that.
I don't want to be unfolding washing just so that I can fold washing.
That was a good way to just unite the everyday person. So it doesn't matter if you have money, you don't have money, you have a job, you don't have a job. Everyone's got washing.
Yeah.
And
washing's always there, as you
yeah.
two will know. Like no matter how catastrophic things are in your life,
yes.
no matter if you've got a kid in hospital, no
yep.
matter if someone's really unwell at home,
yes.
you know, you got to do the washing.
Yes.
You got to do the washing. Actually, sometimes the hard time you're going through, the more washing there is.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you're like, oh.
Which
yeah.
is rude.
It is rude. It really, really
gastro
is.
With twins.
Oh.
I mean, it's
yeah.
really bad.
Oh, you know, just everything. You've had a terrible week and someone you love's in hospital and you're like, I haven't washed any undies.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm wearing
yeah.
my bathers to work. Awesome.
Inside out, buy
yep.
new ones.
Yep, yep, yeah.
Well, I'll be like a man. I remember my husband went hiking for 3 weeks. He's like, I've got 5 pairs. I'll just wear them inside out. I was like,
yeah.
okay, mate.
I'd rather wash them. I'd rather go down to Woolies and buy a new pair.
Oh, well. Oh, my goodness.
And you also, your tea with Jam and Claire, you've got an awesome person coming up. I've already bought my ticket.
Oh, my gosh, yes, we do.
Yes, yes. This is. I think the peas will be into this because yes. She's our queen because she introduced the NDIS.
Yes.
Yes. So we are doing an event with Julia Gillard. It's coming up in just over a week's time. If you haven't heard of her, she was Australia's 27th Prime Minister, famous for many things, including the implementation of the NDIS and her misogyny speech.
Yes.
So we're going to be doing a special event with her. It's going to be online because we sold too many tickets to be able to do it in person
before
all of COVID stuff.
Yep.
But it means we've released more tickets. We've been able to make them a lot cheaper. We are throwing ourselves into the event to make it extra special. Oh. So there will be familiar faces in addition to Julia joining us. There will be singing, there will be speeches, there will be all sorts of fun stuff, giveaways and the rest.
It's so good. We went to the...
No, Annabelle Crab one. That was awesome. Oh. I was just sitting in my bed in my jammies all snuggled up and I was just like, this is just the best.
I know. I don't have to get parking. I don't have to do my hair.
I'm really up for it.
I really liked it. Yeah.
It was awesome.
And we're encouraging people to come in either a power suit or a power track suit.
Yeah. Yes, very good. You need power pajamas to say for some of us.
That's totally fine. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to wear a power track suit.
Have we missed anything that you want to tell the P tribe?
Oh gosh. Can I be really disgustingly corny? The only way what I've gone through could have been worse is if it had been my kid.
Yeah.
It's the only way I can conceptualize it being harder.
Yeah.
And I watched my parents seeing me go through this as an adult, which is very different, but I saw how it shook them and how it kind of made them lose faith in the things they believed in for their lives up until that point. And they were 60 when I got sick. And I just think you're all extraordinary. And I watch my husband show up every day, who is my carer, and put up with the anger and the frustration and the pain and feeling misunderstood, as well as all of the actual implications of being disabled or being unwell.
Yeah.
And, your kids might not be able to say it, but thank you.
Oh, make us cry. Thanks for that. We thought we got through. Never.
It's just because it's all about the love and nothing matters. You just, you're in it.
Yeah.
You just do whatever it takes.
And I think I haven't lived it, but a fear of every parent is something happening to us.
Yeah.
So you have lived what most of us are too scared to even talk about, you know, because that's the fear.
Well, a lot of P families do worry about that, when they die and their children are old, who will look after them? So a lot of our people will understand that fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you had the first day of school, so that.
Yes.
That must have been awesome.
I did. And there was a point I didn't think I'd get that.
Yes, so exactly.
Over the moon.
Yes. Yep. Did you get a lot of photos?
Oh, my God. Did you get a lot of photos?
Does anyone want to see my PowerPoint presentation?
I mean, we took a few.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for being.
Thank you.
Honest and candid and generous with us. So
and awesome.
You.
We've loved you for years.
I know.
We've
looked up thrilled to meet you.
You've articulated for a long time how a lot of us feel, and so it's really nice to meet you.
So, thank you.
Absolute pleasure and a thrill. Thank you.
Oh, no well, hopefully thank we'll you. See you in real life one day.
Yep.
Yes.
Otherwise, we'll just watch you on the Zooms.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All the best with the rest of it.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. See you.
Bye.
Oh, my goodness. Wasn't she gorgeous?
Oh, I have fangirled.
Yes,
me too. For a long time. I've read her in The Age when she used to work at Mamma Mia.
Yes, me too.
I can't believe I've spoken to her.
I know. I'm so thrilled.
And what a beautiful, beautiful person. And I should just say, we just messaged her on Instagram. I thought she won't reply. She's like, yep, I'll do it whenever you want.
Oh,
I just think.
I know.
Generous people are generous people.
Yes,
and
that's
we are lucky
right.
to come across them in our life.
Yeah, we are.
So, anyway.
It made me cry.
Yes.
And she's doing a really amazing, important work.
She really is. She really is. She's an incredible human.
Yeah, she's changing the landscape of women journalists.
Yep. Oh.
And telling the stories that really matter.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to get around that weekendly. What was it called?
No, the weekend briefing.
Weekend briefing.
I listened to it yesterday.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. No more Tom Tilly, but that's good. For those of you who don't know, he used to do Hack on Triple J.
Okay,
yeah. So if Tom Tilly came on, I'd be like, I have been at work too long. Obviously, someone else had got the boys and taken them place because he comes on at 5:30 or whatever.
You'd be like, right.
And I'm like, I've started at 7. I'm still at work for the Hack. It's too long. Anyway, Mandy, what made you cry this week?
Well, I cried reading the book.
That's my cry too.
Well? Yeah.
So let's talk about. We touched on that chapter in the book, but
I mean, I want you to read it. Yourselves.
I want you to read it. Mandy made me read it because I hadn't got up to that point yet.
Yeah, I was like, okay, all these women are incredible.
Incredible.
But me, I want to know the incredible woman with the child with a disability.
Yeah.
And then boom, page 115.
Yes. So get that book. You can read it all. But this chapter, either save it for last or read it first.
Yeah. And I just, tears were just streaming down my face. I was like, everything she said.
Everything.
She just, and I'm so succinct.
Oh, so succinct. Unlike us.
Unlike us and our book.
I don't know what the opposite of succinct is, but maybe it just says Mandy and Kate.
I was really crying. And I also cried because I went out for brunch with my beautiful friend whose daughter died this January. And we had a beautiful brunch together, and I was so thrilled to spend time with her one on one because it's a tough time.
Tough. This is the worst year.
Yeah. And I just was grateful to spend time with her, and I didn't cry, but it was many times of just tears and feeling for her. And
For sure. And did you have a make a difference?
Yeah. Obviously everyone going back to school.
Oh, yes.
You know, it's just because my girls, like, two went Friday, one went the Monday. Yeah. I mean, we can't all go on the same day, can we?
Staggered starts.
You know, so eventually you've got everyone there and everyone's got shoes and everyone's got uniform that fits them. Everyone's got lunch boxes. They've got the books they need.
Oh, it's
amazing.
They've
got new hair ties. Oh. We've got – I just, like, I need a holiday from the preparation for getting back to school.
It's unbelievable.
I felt exhausted.
Oh, it is exhausting.
It's exhausting.
Yep.
Is everyone feeling okay and you're nervous and you're taking on that, and I'll drive you on the first day and I'll pick you up because your shoes are hurting you.
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh.
And then
gosh.
You just get, these are the wrong socks, and you're like, fucking gross. And then it's the wrong socks.
I know. And then can you do my ponytail again because I've got a crest in the middle of my head.
I know.
And I'm just, go. I just sort of had half a day and thought, wow, okay.
It's been a long time.
Ooh, and then I think I feel optimistic.
Yes,
but then I'm nervous of feeling optimistic.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm really, the difference has been that they're proud of going back.
Yes.
And Molly has got a position in the trade kitchen, which is a big deal at her school, and it means that she gets to do some cooking and working on the cash register, and she's so proud of herself.
Yeah.
And so we had to go and get a black T-shirt.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to hear about it when I get home today.
Oh, yeah.
Millie has got a part-time job. So that's made a difference in her, and it's so funny. She's just so tired after 3 hours.
And Mandy's just, you know, gone, oh, what could I do? I'd like to be more of a taxi driver.
Yeah, so she drove the whole thing.
Yep.
I didn't want to say no. I was like, go for it. Get a job. It's awesome.
It is awesome. I loved my first job.
And any time that our kids are doing something age appropriate, my heart is singing. You need steel cap boots? I'm getting them today.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not there? Okay, I'm driving to the next place.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'll do anything it takes.
Oh, yeah. And she just has that joy of being independent from you. She can choose to buy impulse if she wants and not Rexona, you know, all that.
It's just new to me. I'm a new working mum, parent, whatever.
Yes.
And then when Molly left this morning, she said, I'm going to the trade kitchen. I'm going to be an anti-mold the whole time.
She knows it makes you laugh.
No.
Love it.
Oh, goodness.
She's the best.
What about you? Make
a difference. This is in some ways a sad make a difference, but I got a Dyson handheld wand vacuum, right? So I wouldn't say we needed this vacuum, but because we have ducted vacuuming. But it is quite arduous. undoing the big ducted vacuum thing. Anyway, and Woody loves vacuuming, loves it. Everything about vacuuming. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to get this new Dyson. Like it was on Catch of the Day or something. And so I said to him when I picked him up from school, on his second day of school, I've got a really big surprise for you. He just sat and built that thing and he's played with all the attachments and look, if you've got one, the head swivels.
I need one.
Oh, I can't even tell you how much I love it.
Oh.
I just, which is ridiculous. And you can see the dirt in the little thing.
I've got a Dyson in the, like the barrel one.
No, I don't have that. But, but this, it's got like all these different heads for like cat hair and this and that. Anyway, we've had a great time.
Great.
So we love vacuuming so much that, and turn your ears off, environmental warriors, but that if we get polystyrene in a packaging, we break it up into millions of pieces and vacuum it up.
That is very satisfying.
Very, and the vacuum has a really nice hum. So it's really soothing. Therapeutic, very soothing. So get on to vacuuming. And, yeah, anyway, it's made a big difference. I love it.
Yeah, great. Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
And laugh. What made you laugh?
All right. So I've got two laughs. My first laugh actually happened today. So Mandy and I are trying to edit this book. Oh, you can't even imagine. We have to do it separately, but there are parts that we have to do together. We can't do it because we keep talking all the
group
time.
Group assignment with Mandy. It's never worked and it's never going to work.
She just said to me today, this is my worst nightmare having to do this with you.
I just mean from my perspective, yes, I have to sit and concentrate and
there's
not
someone
get
else there that you want to talk to.
Because I'm just like, oh, and then yesterday. Yeah. Oh, sorry, where were we?
Then we're scrolling at different points and, when you read this book, just be proud of us.
Oh, my gosh.
But anyway, we both did topics, right? You'll get to see it. We can't tell you. But we do write a chapter on friendship, obviously, as it's a huge driving factor of the podcast. And then when we get the edit back, there's nothing from Mandy and it's just this one line from the editor. Mandy, did you want to say something about Kate? She's written such a lovely thing about you.
Kate's been just glowing about me and then it says, Mandy, would you like to write something?
And she had written something.
I had written it.
It's just got lost in the email.
Gosh.
But it just made me laugh so much because she's like, would you like to?
I should have written back. We should have left it and just be like, Mandy has nothing nice to say.
Oh, it was just, anyway, it really made me laugh.
Oh, yeah, it was funny.
No,
yeah.
Oh, and the other
I just
thing,
don't know what these editors are thinking about thinking? Us. What are they thinking?
A lot.
They're just like, we've got so much work to do with these two.
I know.
Oh, boy.
Which reminds me, which is why we're annoying, I've got to jump topics and I'm not going to talk about my next laugh. We are going to bring out a second book as long as you buy the first one.
Yes.
And so that's your job to buy the first one. But they think that the editors – that if we put all your peace stories into the second book, it will be better and we'll be able to give them more justice and we'll be able to interview you and we'll have more time.
So when we asked you to be in the book because we didn't know what we were doing, you sent us emails and you shared and we're very thankful to that.
Very.
So we just want to say thank you.
Yep.
But we can't put it in.
We can't put it in because we didn't know what the book was at that point and we probably would have written the second book first.
Yeah,
in the way we were thinking.
That's the way we were thinking. Yeah.
And then we got people who actually know what they're doing and they were like, no, do it this way. So we have to trust them.
Just put that on hold.
It's coming though.
And we'll do a better job of it.
We will and we'll have more time with you.
Yeah,
because
so.
Plus we had the pandemic. We couldn't meet anybody. We couldn't. Anyway, so. Don't worry.
Yeah, that will come.
That will come.
And we will include you.
We will, of course. And my second laugh was the night before last, I was hopped into bed early. I was actually listening to our podcast that has gone out already. And Buzz came wandering up the hall and he just sort of hopped in bed beside me and I paused the podcast and he just like snuggled in and he just looked at me and he goes, I always forget that hopping into bed with you is an option. And it's so nice.
Oh,
so, but I laughed. I was like, well, I just forget about you, really.
Yeah. This is actually a nice thing
this
we could do.
This is a nice thing we could do. Yeah,
cute.
I forget that this is an option.
Oh, it is an option.
It is
vacuuming,
an option.
Vacuuming, cuddling with mum.
They're options.
Yeah, they're options.
So, yeah.
That's fair enough.
That made me laugh and feel all, you know, woman, whatever.
I laughed Oh boy, did I laugh. We went back to Special Olympics, which is very exciting because Molly refused to do any of it online.
Yes, and you were worried. If you listen to the podcast that came out last week, oh, Mandy says, I don't know
she
if
wasn't
going to
go. No. Yeah. And so she was adamant she wasn't going. And I just said, look, I just think, this is what I said. I said, we've got to get a free T-shirt. So I'm just going to go and get it.
Yep.
So that's okay. You don't want to come. Doesn't matter, but I'll go and get the free T-shirt. Yep. And then she's like, I'll come. I said, okay. But this was on the Saturday and it's on Sunday from 5 to 6. Mm. Anyway, so we had the lunch made and the uniform out for Monday by 9:30 in the morning because she just can't
cope. Yeah. It's all done.
Anyway, we get there and this beautiful woman comes up to me and says to Molly, oh, I'm a fan of your mum. Mm. And I listened to her podcast. I said, oh, thank you. And anyway, and as we're going along, I'm sitting at the front talking to some of the women and then Molly comes over to the fence after running for the first time in a year.
Yeah.
She's puffing. Effort, and popping, yeah. Popping. And then she starts going on about the mold in her drink bottle. And I couldn't stop laughing. And then this beautiful woman next to me, her head snapped up like, oh she really does talk about mold. So funny. It was just the best.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely amazing.
I said, I don't make this up.
No, this is all true. We don't have the capacity to. No, we can't write jokes.
Of course not. I don't want this mold.
I don't have this mold.
I can't have this mold. I need a new drink bottle. I can't breathe. Oh, anyway, I was just so thrilled to get her back there. Yeah. And it just makes me cry when I go there because every mum and dad are there just so proud.
Yep.
And every child is out there. They've got mentors. So the athletes are there. All have intellectual disabilities. These are her people. Yep. These are my people.
Awesome.
And I just said, come on, let's join the bowling, let's do the bocce, let's get going.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. And she's like, I'll just stick with this one because it's once a fortnight because I've got to get ready for school.
Also, a girl who knows her limits.
She does.
Awesome. And can say no.
Yes. And this is something a friend of mine were talking about today, actually, whose daughter goes to school with her. And she said that we need to pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah.
And we need to listen when they're saying no.
Yep.
And yeah, so
yep.
I suppose I don't know if I'd really thought about it.
No, and because sometimes no is the default answer.
Yeah, and say like, you know what I mean?
And then sometimes it actually really, really is no.
So I'm really going to pay great attention to that from now on.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
So, well, yay for going back and yay for mold.
And yay for the trade kitchen to be anti-mold the whole time.
Look, the world would be a better place if there was more anti-mold.
I'm surprised that she's doing this, but she said the teacher knows me and she said I don't have to do chopping.
Okay.
Because it's difficult with one hand.
Oh,
but she
said
my hand will be very tired after this day. I said, yes, it will be.
Yes, it will.
But the teacher makes all the difference.
All the difference. You peaches who make a difference, never underestimate. I know you get tired. Just remember.
Yeah.
You're making a huge difference in little people's lives and big people's lives.
Yes.
So, big.
Thank you.
And before we go, the booklet is coming. The booklet is coming. We're still working on it, you know, getting that last little photo win that we need. But your ACAS supporter money is doing amazing, amazing things. And we're super proud of the book.
Thank you. Rate and review. We got a good fun one this week
too. We did. Thank you.
So it's like new listeners are coming in. Yeah. It's amazing.
I don't know who you all are, but welcome. Yes. I know this is the very end and you might have turned off. But I have noticed a few new followers, people in the hangout. So welcome. You'll know that Mandy and I sort of we're a little bit ass about and we're not that professional.
We are.
But welcome.
Yeah, welcome. We're glad to have you in the P tribe.
We are.
And well done to everyone who's navigated back to school.
Yep.
Children and the Perth not wanting to go to school. Yes.
Whose kids couldn't start when they were supposed to start.
Yeah,
you know, the pandemic is just the pile of crap that keeps on steaming.
Yes, it does.
So
together
we'll get through all of this.
Cool.
And so rate and review and we'll see you next week.
Okay. See you. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.